Good afternoon, everyone, on this extremely soggy afternoon in Southern Illinois. As many of you that watch on a regular basis know, I'm just on the Illinois side of St. Louis, Missouri, and St. Louis, Missouri has broken a 100-year-old record today for amount of rainfall in one particular day. Earlier this morning, it was already broken with 8 inches, and I'm sure we've gotten more since then. And so I don't know what the official tally is at this point, but let me just tell you, it's wet outside. So you have tuned in to Hashtag No Limits, and I am your host, Shelley Kino. Hashtag No Limits is about people whose society has placed limits upon, but who have busted through those limits. Ophelia says in Hamlet, we know who we are, but not who we will be. And I believe that to be 100% true, and that there is no better example of that than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. The caterpillar literally dissolves into its cells and then reforms into the butterfly. As if that's not difficult enough, it then has to struggle in order for its wings to be able to be strong enough to fly once it gets out of the cocoon. While none of that can be easy, neither is busting through limits that society places upon different people. And today, I am excited to bring my guest to you. We have tried, I don't even know how many times, for this to work. And she's so incredibly busy with a million and one things that it's been scheduled and then we've rescheduled. And so anyway, this is Angel. Angel, I'm so glad that this finally worked out, because from what I remember in our pre-interview, your kids are absolutely amazing and have overcome so many obstacles and continue to overcome mm-hmm. those obstacles. And every one of them is a massive success story, maybe even one more so than the next. I don't necessarily want to put them in that sort of ranking, as because you don't want to do that with your kids. But every one of them has amazing things to talk about. So let's get into it. For those of you who are watching for the first time, please like or subscribe to this channel and comment. Let us know where you are. Let us know if you're watching hashtag live or hashtag replay. Angel, how are you?
I'm good. And I am excited to be here as well. It has been a while trying to get us to meet. So, you know, I feel like your last guest was so famous, you know, with Temple Grandin, that I've got a tough act to follow here. But I think we're going to try our best.
Oh, shoot. Temple's been like 2 months ago. You're way past being her, being right after her. So it's all good.
Good.
So, yeah. So tell us about you. Tell us about your family.
Okay. So I am mother of two girls and two boys. They are all adults now. They all were educated through the public education system, all four special needs during that time. About myself, I'm turning 60 in December. I work a full-time IT high-stress career. I think today we're going to talk about what I'm going to say is a retrospective about raising them, because I love the fact that, you know, they're independent and they all have their own journeys. My journey with the educational system as their parent, how we overcame challenges, and some of the things that led to the successes of today.
All right. Well, let's jump right in.
Okay. So I'm going to start a little bit with the family dynamic. And in order to do that, I have to disclose a little bit about myself. So I have always been driven. I've been ambitious. And when I was the caterpillar, for most of my adult life, I weighed between 350 and 400 pounds. So when my children were younger, I decided that I wanted to change that. And actually, one of my children said to me, you know, I'm not sure that I want a fat mom. And, you know, we all kind of have that go to heart. And so in 2006, way early, I went to Barnes and had gastric bypass surgery. I lost 215 pounds. It's been 16 years and I still have about 200 of it off, believe it or not. So
congratulations.
Well, thank you. We had to make a lifestyle change within the family because our focus was not on doing things as a group. Our focus was everybody was going to school and everybody had their stuff. And we decided that my husband had been a runner for cross country, and we would go to a race and one of us either had to not run. So we said, you know what, let's pay the fee and let's put the 5, 6, and 7-year-olds on the course, because I see people standing at the by the little cones, and I see people going, go this way, go this way. And for me, kind of being raised in the era of the early 60s, I was literally told girls don't sweat. Girls don't do sports. So it was intimidating. I wanted them to not feel that. So we threw them in the course. And the last count, the family had run over 300 events together. We just kept going. Oh. I have more t-shirts than you can imagine. At six a shot.
I bet.
So we did that, and it was something that we could do together. And I can't say that everybody loved it all the time, but again, it changed the dynamic of what we did. This set the stage later for those harder pre-puberty years and for those teen years. At the time, you know, who wants to get up at 7 a.m. on a Saturday and go off somewhere to run around in the cold? You know, we did it. We did it. Absolutely. It was important for my health. It was important for my husband's health. And my girls, I think, now sort of wish they were still doing it. And the boys actually have continued a bit. So that's kind of the dynamic that happened early on. I did a couple of images here. I wanted to show the image of walking on the razor's edge, because I think that's how things often feel. We sort of feel like we're always right on that edge, especially when you're parenting special needs children. And then I did a before and after of my transition. That's a half marathon, and then that's me the morning of my surgery. The butterfly is a shout out to No Limits here. We never know. We never know what we can become. And then I roomed with artists in college, so I always make woeful attempts at drawing. The hand-drawn image there, that's me. I drew it. And the darkness in front of you and the color and the vibrancy behind you, to me, is a reminder to always leave things better than you found them. So
that's nice.
Yeah. Again, woeful attempt at art, but for me, it was more about the color. So that sets the stage for sort of where we are. If you go to the next one, I'll show you the kids a little better here. Okay. So there they are. That's the tribe. And let me move mine. Now, the two boys are now ages 28 and 23, and the two girls are now 24 and 22. My oldest boy was diagnosed as Asperger at 4. Very, very early, the first child diagnosed in the Fox School District here in St. Louis. I can talk more about that when we get to his part. The younger boy is highly functionally gifted and probably the hardest one to parent because of just the stark difference between him and the other three siblings. He pushes everything to its logical limits. Now, the two boys are our biological children. And the two daughters are our gifts from foster care. I sincerely believe that a higher power brought us together. So if you're a person of faith, you know what I'm talking about. The oldest girl was 5 almost, and the youngest had just turned 3 when they came into our life. They had had severe abuse and neglect, and the situation was so extreme that they were not exposed to any learning, any nurturing. They survived, but they both had a lot of physical and psychological scars. So we thought that there was strength in numbers, and that, you know, my husband was raised with a big family. I was raised alone. It was the best decision of our life. So as you can see, you know, we kind of all fit. So,
yeah.
Okay.
And beautiful family.
Yeah, we get them cleaned up at least once a year. So if you go to the next one, I'll talk a little bit in detail. Well, got another picture there. So these are the girls. My older and younger daughter were developmentally behind. They had not had anybody invested in their education. They had not had anybody sit and read to them. You know, when you're learning to survive, you aren't necessarily taking the time to learn your ABCs or how to write your name. So coming to us that young, we started them in a Montessori school. Because they were foster children in the state of Missouri, the Montessori daycare was subsidized by the state, but we also had the boys there. So again, there was never any difference between the services that they got and the boys as well. We kept going in a structured environment. I worked, my husband worked. So, you know, summers, we took advantage of summer school, which was a lot of fun classes. We did YMCA camps. We did, I was able to work from home for a period of time. There was really no unsupervised time in early in life because we just, that trust factor wasn't there. You know, you're never quite sure what's been seen, so you don't know what you're going to see. And we made sure that when they went to school, their records were updated, and we asked the homeroom teacher, go to the office, pull their folder, please read it. You know, we reinforced the fact that it was there. We wanted that familiarity. All four of my children rode the bus. I could see the school from my driveway, but we wanted them to understand that if you didn't have your things with you, it was harder on everybody else. So if you have to run back as the bus is standing there because you forgot whatever it was, you had to run back and somebody had to stand and wait on you. So even though it was an eighth of a mile around the corner, you know, they got the experience of climbing up on the big yellow bus and making sure that they, you know, had their backpacks. And that was just something that my husband and I felt important whenever possible. We worked with the Fox School District. They were very, very supportive. And the director of special education at the time, when my older boy was diagnosed Asperger, said, just expose them to as many things as you can, as many different stimulus, as many different options and choices. And so, you know, we took full advantage of whatever was available. Now, to be honest, I'm not the mom that's going to take the crayons and take them out of the butter container and sit for 3 hours and color. Right? That just was never my personality. But I am the mom that will take you someplace where somebody else will help you color and I will watch or I will, you know, help along. I'm just not that gluing the macaroni was never really exactly my thing, but I could do other things with you. So that's kind of what we did. We had IEPs. The two girls and my older boy had them. My younger boy, the gifted one, they don't really offer that type of guidance until you get to a certain age. And frankly, I think he kind of needed it more than the others because he would push the limits. He would try to find the wrinkle in the armor so that he could, you know, best the system. You know, even in college, when they would do a survey, if they didn't limit it to one vote per person, he would figure it out and go in there and vote 100 times. Right. I mean, it's your own fault for not governing the participation.
So I really want this particular thing, so I'm going to vote for it 100 times.
If you didn't limit it, you know, again, yeah. You have to the people who are pushing the limits are saying in the houses we're just bucking for average, right? The three that were struggling to keep up, the three where academics was foreign to them, you know, sitting at a desk for the two girls and learning something in a safe environment was just not anything they were familiar with. So for them, and if you had something they wanted, well, you took it because that was the only way you got anything. And it was a different skill to sit quietly and listen to a teacher, which we all know kids are not necessarily born with. One of the things we put in their IEP was that there would be no punishment that involved taking away physical activity. So you couldn't sit out on recess. You had to go to recess. We had a small trampoline in our house, and instead of being made to sit somewhere and time out, we would make you go jump. You got to go jump for 10 minutes because moving those large muscles gets out all that frustration. And 10 minutes is a really long time to have to jump continuously. It really is. Try it sometime. The other thing we did when they were younger was my younger daughter was not exactly looking forward to doing things with me, right? She wanted to go off and do three-dimensional puzzles. And so she would get a time in. You're going to get 10 minutes right with me. You're going to have to help me make the salad because, you know, time out is exactly what you're looking for. So right. We would do time ins occasionally for things like that. They learn how to get what they want anyway, right? Whether it's if they're doing something fun, she's going to want a time in. So that was, it was a challenge with the three of them. My older boy's 5 years older, and then they were like stair steps. So I had a first grader, a second grader, a third grader, and then an eighth grader.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Yes. And going through the same school, the same elementary school, that, you know, we were pretty much a group and the teachers knew them, like I'd had your sister, I'd had your brother. And I'm sure a lot of people with siblings have that same thing. We found that you had to be both hands-on and hands-off with school. There's a delicate balance between being too involved, where they think that you're always there and everything, and then mm-hmm. being too hands-off, where you're never involved. And so the running came as a gift to us because a lot of the teachers were also doing, you know, the 5K explosion. So the elementary school teachers were like running in the same races. And so you could kind of fast walk up to them and do a little chit chat and keep going. That was a convenience, really. So yeah, and the girls, the hardest period of time was the transition into high school. The social media had just started pretty much. Cell phones were not really brand new, but they were where everybody had one, and we didn't really have a lot of the parental controls that you have today. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of the wilds of the internet. And both of my daughters went through what I'm going to call the drastic change. They needed a drastic change. My older daughter, it's just academia wasn't doing it. High school is so full of stress. She was singing in the choir, but performance anxiety, you know, so much of having to stand up in front of people. If you enjoy singing, that's great. But then all of a sudden, you know, you have a recital to do in an auditorium. Are you comfortable with that? You know, I don't know. Not everybody is. So she did not continue with that piece. She had a period of time where she wasn't in public school. I won't go into that too much, but we did find a way for her to have a drastic change. So half of ninth grade, she was somewhere else for school. And then when she came back, she had a new perspective. She was able to look at her friends, look at her classes that she was taking, and realize that it was all a means to an end. Realize that I have to get to where I want to be. About my older daughter, there's a very nurturing, kind, giving, she's in healthcare today, person who discovered about that peace by being away from where she had been her whole life. So that short little stint away gave her the chance to stand on her own two feet and say, what do I want? And that picture that you see is her graduating from STLCC with the most outstanding clinical award. That's the person who was the most compassionate and the most attentive to the patients.
Oh, wow. That's an awesome award. Yeah.
Especially when you consider that no one spoke any language to her until she was almost, you know, 5 years old. So
yeah, that's amazing.
Very, very proud of that. And then, you know, today, she works in a hospital. She loves what she does. She's, again, the doctor in the family. Whenever anybody has anything, people call her immediately and say, okay, she's what they call a radiographer, and she's not a doctor. So, but she is board certified. And the picture in the middle, she just got married last November. And that's kind of the tribe as of last November. She's, you know, wonderful husband and couldn't be happier for her. She discovered that junior college, STLCC, Jeffco, those places were better than trying to do the university thing. She got accepted at SLU, but it was more close to home. I want to live at home. I want to sleep in my own bed. And as a result, she doesn't have any student loans today.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
And that's not the case for most students. And my own daughter managed to get out of all 4 years university and come out debt free, but she had to work really hard to get that way. So
yes, it's very, very unusual. Now her sister, as I said, remember, she liked to hide away and do a puzzle. If you can see the top picture there, she made her dad a vest for Father's Day. That's a vest made out of duct tape. And she used to make three-dimensional teddy bears out of notebook paper and tape. And so she's always been very tactile. Everything was dexterity. And she tried a year in a typical university, and it just never, that passion has to be there. With these special needs kids, if they don't find what motivates them, you don't get them motivated. And you can't tell them what it is. So fortunately, my gift in life is looking at people and figuring out what their talent might be. And so for her, I just thought she needed to work with her hands. So we sent her to Rankin. And she is a member of the International Brotherhood of Aerospace Worker and Machinists right now. Yeah, I know.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, she's a machinist. She runs these big $3 million machines and does a little of the programming. And it's a wire that, you know, vibrates back and forth and goes a gabillion million degrees per minute or something. But so she found that she could work with her hands. And she liked the environment at Rankin, which was not as... I don't want to say it wasn't as academic, but she can put her headphones in. She can be in a room with loud machines. She can sing to herself. She can high five the other kids in the class while they're working. It's just a different roll up your sleeves skill. Mm-hmm. And the only student loans she has are from that 1 year at SEMO. You and I talked about this. I don't know if people know about it, but Missouri is very supportive of young people that have a diagnosis on the DSM. What is it? Five now? Four or five? I forget what
I
version.
I believe is out. Yes.
Five. Job skill that matches a job description in the want ads. And there's always the want ads for them. So that is very reassuring. There's an organization called Missouri Workforce. And it is funded by the state, and they have offices, and you go into the office. I let my children go there themselves. You have to have the letter that you have the diagnosis of DSM-4, and they pay 100% for vocational education. So a certificate in nursing assistance, STLCC's radiological department, there they are. Now they have two programs, a youth and an adult. If you and you can do them both. My older daughter did them both. As a youth, she got her certificate for nursing assistant, and they pay books, scrubs, equipment, everything, not just tuition. And then after she turned 18, she went, graduated, you know, did her gen eds. And then when she went into this program, the 2 year program for radiological technology, where she became the radiographer, they paid for the tuition and her, you know, equipment and labs as well for that. And it is a super supportive thing, but it's a one shot. If you screw up, if you drop out, you know, if you flunk out, you don't get to come back. This is made for people who to give them a leg up. Mm-hmm. And young adults that come out of, you know, the public education system and don't want to go into Standard University, give this a try. Go talk to them. They mail the check directly to your university, you know, and you're covered. You can go get that skill, whatever that is. If you want to be a construction person, if you want to be an auto mechanic, if you want to take x-rays, if you want to, you know, anything that is not a four-year university type institution. So, you know, Rankin, JEPCO, STLCC, any of those around in the St. Louis area.
And I did, because we did talk about this a little bit earlier, I did look it up, and I think this is the one for Illinois, but I believe that probably every state has something similar. I don't know exactly what it would be called in every state, but there was apparently the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act that was passed in 2014 that kind of drives this funding. So if you don't live in Illinois or Missouri, reach out and just kind of, all I did was type in workforce and my state and then workforce and Missouri in Google. And then I found what we're talking about right now. And I am putting in the link to the one in Illinois and the one in Missouri over into the chat box. So you can just use the links for those two states. But like I said, if you're not in one of those two states, absolutely look this up, because what an amazing opportunity and probably underused as most of these kinds of things are.
Yeah, I would say start early. They do take some time to process paperwork. It's not like something you can go in the week before. When you go in, you have to know what program you want to get into. You have to have met all the prerequisites. My older daughter did the prerequisites at JEFCO, and that was, you know, English, history, whatever. And then went to do the program at STLCC. And there's a certain amount of, there's a time limit and there's a tuition limit. But the idea here is, let's get the workforce skilled. Let's build a skill. So again, I can't speak highly enough of it. It really worked well.
Yeah, I mean, that to me, that's just incredible that that is out there. And I know in one of the junior colleges near me, there was a young man who wanted to be a truck driver. And I do know that there, I don't know if this is exactly what it was called, but there were some programs that were able to help him. But like you said, it was a one-off. And if he didn't make it out, or he had some pre-existing situation that didn't allow him into the program, unfortunately. But yeah, it was the same thing. Like, well, they were going to pay for everything for him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I find, let's go to the next slide and talk a little bit about okay. the boys. So what I found, so my boys, I know they're shyer than the girls. Their highlight reel doesn't look anywhere near as fancy. With my older boy, he was diagnosed early. We did a couple of blind visits when he was very, very young. I mean, he was diagnosed by 4. He went through early childhood education from Missouri. He went through the Montessori school. And then, as I said, our elementary school, middle school, high school, they were so incredibly supportive. The teachers were, I mean, I cannot complain. I'm one of those few voices that says my public schools not only pitched in, they partnered.
That's awesome.
But one of the things I can say is that we did the full battery of tests. And Shelley's heard this example. We did not know what the diagnosis was going to be. We had heard mentally retarded. We had heard developmentally delayed. We had heard the dreaded not otherwise specified, right, where you don't know. Asperger was fairly new. This was, he was born in 94. So this was like 98, 99. And he was the first child diagnosed in his district. By the time he was in second grade, the resource room in his elementary school had 14 children with the Asperger diagnosis. And they weren't having the other, you know, the attention deficit and, you know, dyslexia and all that. They weren't even in that resource room. He's still best friends with someone from that same room today. Because, you know, these kids kind of latch on and they keep in a straight line unless otherwise acted upon, right? But mm-hmm. It took a pediatric neurologist to do the accurate diagnosis for us, and he knew within 2 minutes. His questions to us were on point. His, does your child do X, was on point. Whereas some psychologists we went to, we felt like we were being led. We felt like they knew what we knew what they wanted to write. It wasn't as scientific as I expected. Even the school district at one time asked me how he walked. How does he walk with you? He walks fine. I mean, he's athletic. Well, what happens when you walk like together? Okay, we walk together. You know, that's a question. You're perplexed. You're thinking, what are they looking for? Are they looking for a gait problem? Are they looking for slow, fast, limping, you know, something right. out of balance? So I said, well, you know, we play games like if you step on a crack, you break your mother's back. They wrote in his evaluation that he was afraid of the cracks in the sidewalk.
Every time you tell me that story, it just irritates me.
Which is textbook autism, but not what I had said. So we did get that corrected. And this child, we tested regularly. We did the full battery. And if any parent out there's ever been through it, you know that it's like 2 days and it's, you know, 5 or 6 evaluations each day and it's exhausting. But we did it before kindergarten, after third grade, before sixth grade, before middle school, after middle school. And then after he graduated high school, he went back and submitted to the test. And after he graduated college, he went back and submitted to the tests because we felt that it was important. They had been good to us. And so, you know, we said, look, we'd like to do this. And we set those checkpoints up during his IEP meetings, which we had every single year. His services went down to nothing. And I think he graduated with, you know, like a 3.5 GPA or something in high school. He ran cross country and track all 4 years and went off to the University of Central Missouri, where he graduated in 5 years. Average student, I can say. So the role of sports is important. Cross country is a great sport for two reasons. One, it's an individual sport, but you're on a team. And two, they don't cut in cross country. And cross country is almost always the kids that don't fit anywhere else, right? They're a little bit of goofballs. They're a little bit this and that. Sometimes the football players and wrestlers are on those teams because they want to, you know, keep in shape. And with us running as a family, I mentioned we were doing races. We set the stage for that to happen. We knew what it was like to run a race. There was no initial anxiety because we had been doing it. And so, you know, the 4 years of track and 4 years of cross country meant that there was an involvement in something bigger than himself, but the commitment wasn't cerebral. You could just get out there, put one foot in front of the other, follow the other people, and you're done. And so that paid off in spades, I think. Plus the large muscles moving, the stress, the anxiety, the stimming, you know, that happens when you're that tired, you just don't have enough energy to stim. And so that was a good experience. University of Central Missouri, they had a really great set of accommodations. When we went in with the full folder, right, this folder, and said, here you go, they handed us back a list of these are the accommodations that we will do for your child. And we were like, wow, this is awesome. Now, my child weaned himself off of all of his special services in almost every, you know, middle school and high school. Just, you know, didn't need them very much after a while, but kind of knew they were there. As a parent, I almost wish someone had mentioned to me that maybe higher education wasn't going to do what we thought it was going to do. Young adults today have a terrible time with the right kind of employment, especially Asperger's, not non-neurotypicals, because if you look up special needs employment for young adults, they want to string beads all day.
Right.
Or they think that you're a savant and that you have this magical computer brain that Hollywood has educated them for. We don't have savants, right? Sometimes we just have middle of the road people with talents and skills that aren't magic, but they're not, you know, repetitive, sit and do, you know, assembly, string a bead work either. So these people are underemployed. Alex has a college degree and he's working now in a place where they appreciate him. He works at an Arby's, and Arby's is extremely special needs friendly, extremely, but he's too comfortable there. And so that middle ground where you don't have to go in and shine at the interview, you don't have to radiate, you know, an aura to be hired, but yet people understand that this is a B player. Your B player is steadfast, consistent, reliable, dependable, and not going to make, it's going to get along with everybody in your workforce. You know, they're not going to go out and set the world on fire, but they're also not going to set your workplace on fire. They are going to be consistent and predictable. And that is a skill, and it's a talent that is underused today.
Yep, exactly. And I love how you say that, that it's a B player, but we need a lot more B players than your star A players. Because if everybody is a star, there isn't that consistency. There isn't that good foundation. There isn't necessarily even that team idea of interacting and wanting to uplift everybody, not just myself.
Mm-hmm. And they stick around.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Sorry, I interrupted your story. There's some other things that when you're ready for me to, I will. Ask
yeah, I was just going to mention the child with the, I just threw some rankings out there from some report cards, and you can't read them, but it's one of 443, one of 459, one of 400. So my overachiever and my gifted child, his identity is that academic achievement. And, you know, he's just now, as a grad student in John Hopkins, you know, paying his own tuition. He hasn't had to do that because, you know, he had the grades for it. I would say the education system, to me, that's really where they could use some pumping up. But how do you handle, you know, the other side of the spectrum? And it was also difficult with three siblings, you know, really struggling to try to keep up academically and then to have one on the other side so incredibly gifted. And I mean gifted compared to everybody else, not just to them. He was the hardest one to parent. He's very, very successful now. He's an economist at a very young age. And, you know, his opinions matter and are published, and I'm extremely proud of him. But as a parent, you have to level the playing field for all of your children. I am super proud of all of them. My younger daughter is getting married now in October, and this one is become the officiant of the family. And he likes to do the ceremony. He went and got the internet thing. He married his sister in November, and he's going to marry the other one in October. And just to show that you never know what's going to make people proud, he wears the little stole for the whole reception, like, you know, I'm the guy. So for all the accolades and all the trophies and all the diplomas and everything, the thing that was really like, look at what I did, was to officiate at his sister's wedding. So,
wow. And I want to say, you didn't point this part out, but again, it's hard for the viewers to see this, but the grade point average, the grade point average, this is out of a 4, he's 4.7, 4.5. 4.6. So, I mean, he, in order to get that, was taking all the weighted classes and AP classes and everything, you know, and anything it looks like that gave him more than that 4.0.
And running track and cross country and starting a social club. And he was working in the youth ministry. We got involved in a Methodist church and who went on missions in the summer. And we have a youth pastor who I credit also with, you know, giving my children the other side of not just academics, but we went to Joplin 79 days after the F5 tornado and helped clean up debris. We went the next summer and helped drywall. Just, you know, hands-on things to try to put yourself in service, I guess is the best way to say it. And that son there, the younger boy, was probably the closest to our youth pastor. And we still have those relationships today because I think that moral center is important and those values are important. Whatever your values are, right? Whatever they are, you just spread them to your children and whatever behavior you do, they model. And so again, officiating at the wedding, you know, that was something that happened, and giving back whenever possible, you know, flipping hamburgers at a homeless shelter or going to Des Moines and working at a food pantry, you know, those kind of things help them realize what advantages they have, you know, the fact that they could go to camp or the fact that they, you know, could go to vocational school or could go to university if they so chose. And I hope that they understand that not everybody has those opportunities. So.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I mean, like I said at the intro, you know, every one of your kids is, I still don't want to say it, but I'm going to say it, more impressive than the next. And I don't literally mean that, but I mean, it's just to know, especially your girls, thinking about, you know, how their lives started, but your boys too, because of the difficulties that they each faced, and they were different difficulties. You know, as you said, that your oldest son, I think, is the more difficult one to parent because the younger son, because of the ability to just get everything. It sounds like, as far as understanding it, is what I mean by get everything, not like he's receiving stuff, but, you know, that he just has that ability to understand everything somewhat easier to everybody else. And even that I'm hesitant to say, because gifted doesn't automatically mean.
Well, that's actually true. No, that's actually true. And the problem is, again, finding the crack, finding the way to do less work. It's hard to respect your fellow man when you're so much faster, you know, when you're getting things quicker. That patience, the ability to work with people that aren't as gifted as you is what's hard to teach there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And you had mentioned earlier, and I hope that this is streaming okay for the audience, because right now you are frozen on my screen, but I don't know if it's projecting that way to everybody else. So hopefully it's not, and hopefully we're both moving. But you had mentioned, there we go. Okay. You had mentioned earlier that you had it written into their IEPs that recess could not be taken away as a form of punishment. And just last summer, I believe, just last summer in Illinois, a law was passed that across the state, recess cannot be taken away for discipline reasons. And you can't say, well, they have PE later, so that's their recess. They won't allow that either. And to be able to get the school, however many years ago this was, to understand that need for the movement, for that, like you said, that, that large muscle movement, and to be willing to write that into, and sounds like followed the followed that in the IEP. That's huge, because there are still parents across the country. Like I said, Illinois, we are the first state to have such a restriction on holding recess. And it's so across the country, it's still a battle.
So the resource room in the elementary school had things that I would never have thought of. And I'll give you some examples, and you know, people can try this at home if you think it might work, especially if you have a child with sensory issues. They had little plastic brushes, and they discovered that the kids that don't like sensory things would like to have their skin brushed occasionally with something that wasn't a human touch. They had a bag that was a dark bag that you could crawl in. It wasn't weighted, but it was darkened, and it would shut out all light, and they could sit without light stimulation. They had foot like stepping stones that had different textures on them, and they would take their shoes off but leave their socks on, and they could walk across those stones and feel different textures on the bottoms and the palms of their feet. You know, that is, that to me was amazing that that was available. And we're talking first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth graders had the ability to ask to go to the resource room. You know, they had a, what you would call a piano mover, wheels. You could lay on your chest and kind of wheel around and get low. Things like that, that changed the perspective of the day so that the child could then stand up and go sit in the classroom for the rest of the day.
And that's so incredible. And I didn't have everything that you just mentioned in my classroom, but I had a lot of those things. And it's incredible to see how each person needs something different. And sometimes what worked or helped, I shouldn't say worked, what helped the day before, or maybe even the hour before, isn't necessarily going to work the next time.
It's like dessert. Sometimes I want a fudge sundae. Sometimes I want a strawberry. I mean, it's not
right. Exactly. And it's, and for people to understand that, that it isn't something that, I mean, yeah, you just said you sometimes want fudge versus strawberry, but these sensory, these are needs. And so it helps to regulate the students, and they're not just making up the fact that, you know, they now need to go stand out, leave the classroom, be obvious that they have something that isn't able to be managed where they are, so that everybody else sees them, and then go off to this resource room or come into, you know, while they were in my classroom, use one of these devices. I'm working with teachers and society to try to get people to understand that it isn't a want.
Yeah, you're right.
It is a need.
It's like insulin. You wouldn't tell a diabetic, oh, you want your insulin. It's an absolute physiological. One of the things I was going to mention as you were talking is I think also that there is a self-regulating piece. And I think as children age and become young adults, and as young adults become older adults, they will self-regulate to what their environment is. Like a fish will grow to the size of their tank. If they have a way to express, they will, but they'll also find where those comfort area is. My older boy wanted to do this. This was his self-stimming. Well, he wears a spirit band, just a solid colored one. And mm-hmm. what he'll do when he goes to the, you know, the men's room or driving a car, he'll slip it off and he'll do that with it, because that's more socially acceptable to do this when you're holding something like a fidget spinner than it is to do it without it. So those little modifications make it so people aren't staring at you anymore, and you can keep it around your wrist. And I use that as an example of, as they mature, if they understand their needs, they will find ways so that it's not a big production. Oh my gosh, I have to go to the resource room today. Right. Yeah, as you get to be, you know, that adolescent, and God forbid the teenage years, they find ways to shape and hone themselves so they fit in with whoever their group is. And, you know, I saw that happen. And
I'm so glad that you put it that way, because I think what happens often is, especially teachers of the younger grades, or people who are around younger children, you know, they see a lot of the things that you just mentioned, you know, a lot of those behaviors. And then they see someone who is an adult, or maybe, you know, upper elementary or the high school, and they're not having those behaviors anymore. And I think the misconception is they've outgrown the need for it. And it's not. That's why it's a misconception, because it isn't that they've outgrown it. It's, and you had mentioned this with your son too, that he had learned how to do the things that the accommodations had been doing for him prior. And so he kind of weaned himself off of needing them, I think was the wording that you used. And that's what our goal is as educators, is to help our students who need these things to be able to get what they need, unfortunately for them, in a more socially appropriate way. I mean, I hate that we even have to worry about that for them, but exactly what you said, doing this versus, you know, twirling something on his finger or, you know, moving something around in one hand, one is accepted, one isn't.
Yeah. I mean, that's just culture. And again, the coping, it is the coping skill that is the golden nugget here. It's not how you chose to cope. It's that you figured out that you needed to. And you, I think sometimes, as you said, people think, oh, you're cured or you grew out of it. No, if you look at yourself, the things that you ran and needed as a younger person or a child are exactly the same things you provide yourself today, or your spouse provides you, or your best friend, or, you know, your puppy. We still need those. They never go away. We just find different ways to meet that need. And you hope that it is healthy. You know, you hope that it's something that is not self-destructive. And if you acknowledge the non-self-destructive ones and make them convenient and make them kind of meet that need and make it not judgmental and available, then suddenly that becomes the thing that, you know, can meet the need in a way that isn't self-destructive. When you get self-destructive, then you have that drastic change that needs to happen.
Right. Right. And we have a comment from somebody who's very important to me, but also someone who's been important to you and someone that you know. He says, insightful. Thank you for sharing what for many is too private to express. Helpful to all of us seeing young people in classrooms and elsewhere. And I don't know if you knew this, but Kevin is teaching now full time.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Well, I say that. He does that and he still does his consulting thing too. But yeah, he teaches at a high school level. Now he teaches business classes. So
I would say that he was always teaching.
I agree. That's yeah, absolutely true. So we have just a few minutes left, and I want to make sure that we, you know, we have covered everything that you wanted to share. And then if we have, I will ask you just a couple questions and about some things that. Okay. So one of the things that you mentioned was that evaluation, that very full comprehensive evaluation. Now, with the IEP in school, they get that every 3 years. They're supposed to. So the timing that you were mentioning, I think, was in line with that 3-year reevaluation. Was it just the school evaluation that you did, or did you truly go out to the neuropsych and have that done there?
So the school did the regular, and I believe that we had to refresh the diagnosis paperwork, and we would go back to the pediatric neurologist, but it wasn't as frequent. So maybe every other, we went back to the pediatric neurologist.
Okay.
Because they wanted a fresh, you know, writing that, because of course the DSM diagnosis is going to change, right?
Right.
No, it's not. It, you know, once diagnosed, this is a condition. This was not, you know, anything transient, but we did. And it was never, you know, it wasn't prohibitive. We were just, we made the appointment. We kept the file with the doctor fresh, and, you know, luckily, medication wasn't, we never chose that because we didn't think that, again, we had a good resource room. We had a good support system. My younger daughter did do medication later on, and we absolutely recognized the value of it. But I mean, we had some who do, some who don't. It's really about the behavior and how they handle it. So,
right. Absolutely. And so, obviously, you're extremely proud of all of your children, and you've said that. Has there been, though, one or two really big limits that they busted through that just really, I don't necessarily want to know, I don't want to say more proud, but like you went, yes, like nobody thought that one was going to happen, or, you know, that's totally was not in the vision board.
So, one of them was in a program for at-risk youth. And these are youth who, for whatever reason, have either been someone around them has committed crimes, or they've committed crimes, or they're in a situation where they need, you know, almost lockdown. And that child completed a 6-month intense program in 4 months, got all of the trust awards, was hired to do a part-time job at the facility, and then and was helping the other residents in 4 months. So it really was a situation where most people don't come out of this thinking that you're on the high side of life. Most people come out of this thinking that, you know, this was a detention, this was suspension, this was that. And this person embraced it and took it as an opportunity of my life is being saved here.
Oh, that's awesome. So what's next for the McGee family?
Well, we have a wedding coming up in October. So let's see, the oldest, working on that sort of career planning, right? Life skills, career planning. My oldest boy tried to be a teacher and went through it, passed, you know, the 5-part test that you take, passed it on the first try, right? Yay. But then couldn't handle standing in a classroom, which I understand. So he's now actually teaching in the fast food restaurant. He's in the restaurant where they teach managers. So he actually teaches the managers, even though it's not really a role, but it is. So I would like to see something come of that. We're working on where that career ambition might be that provides more for supporting yourself, right? But again, you know, dependable, not in trouble, does that B plus player all the time. Older daughter is married now and looking forward to trying to becoming a mother. And that's going to bring some issues, right? Right. Everybody, we all are scared to death of that. We're all terrified of how it's going to turn out. So knock wood, we'll see if, it may be sooner, maybe later. We don't know. We'll see.
Right.
We'll see how the cards play on that one.
Right.
Younger boy getting, going to Johns Hopkins and, you know, working for some big company. So there's that ambition all the way. And then younger girl getting married in October, working with dangerous machines all the time. So yeah, they're all just, it all seems still to fit. And, you know, I am truly blessed, and it is all them. I cannot take credit for any of it. when we went through foster care behavioral training, they said to us, you know, people say, oh, why would I want a child from such a terrible background? And they said, look, there are people from the world's best backgrounds that have problems, and there are people from the world's worst backgrounds that turn out as golden as you can imagine. So you cannot predict. All I can say is that I was extremely lucky to have to be in the lives of these four people.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's very beautiful. Well, I thank you so much. And I'm so excited that this finally worked out. As every time I've spoken to you, when we've tried to get this to work out, I'm so inspired by your whole family story. And I just appreciate everything that they are doing in society and that you have done to get them to that point. And it's not all been you. Your husband's been there too. We didn't mention him.
Absolutely. He's super dad. I think he's the fifth child in this one. So he loves all the fun. He's the vice president in charge of fun. So
hey, there you go. Got to have somebody in that large of a group be in charge of that for sure. So to my audience, make sure that, you know, you like this episode, you give Angel some love and all of her family. Join me next week. I will be having Courtney Burnett. Courtney was with me very early on. I want to say she was maybe like my third or fourth guest. She's a speech language pathologist assistant who also happens to raise a daughter with very severe and complex medical needs. She has started her own business since we have spoken last time, and she's great at explaining and understanding assistive technology and why you need it and why it's helpful and how it can benefit you. So be sure to tune in next Tuesday at 1 o'clock. It will be a recorded episode. I just want to put that part out there. So even though it doesn't air until 1 o'clock, it'll still be replays and everything that you can get normally. So Angel, again, thank you so much. So, so very much. Enjoy hopefully grandbabies and hopefully retirement soon in the, you know, like in the 5-ish, 8-year-ish window of life.
Actually, I'm a student now. I'm getting a master's degree
because
never stop learning. So
exactly. As a teacher, I am all about that. Never stop learning things. Thanks, everybody. Thank you, Kevin.
Thanks, everybody.
And for joining us. And I will see you next time.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelly Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelly Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelly Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shellykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shellykino.com, shellykenow.